Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hal. Thank you for tuning in and week out. In case this is your first time listening to the podcast, this is a show forecasting about Vietnam's future from a business and society kind of lens. And we're having some of the top innovators in the country on this show regularly. And today we're pleased to have one of them, but in the food and beverage space, not in tech or business or industry, but something very specific and dear to our hearts since we love all eating out. Peter Kung Franklin, he is the owner and founder of Anan Saigon, which is now recently rewarded the first ever one-star Michelin in the guide in Ho Chi Minh City. So congratulations, Peter. Big accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
That was just about 6 months ago. And for those that don't know the story of Anan and Peter, he actually shared it was one of his goals to be the top Vietnamese restaurant in the world, not necessarily having a star or this award and that award, just being in the hearts and minds of everyone, not just Vietnamese, for Vietnamese food. So well done, Peter, to the team as well.
Cảm ơn HBV Việt Nam đã đồng hành cùng Vietcetera cho lối sống từ chối rủi ro, sống lành chủ động.
Over to you. I'd just like to hear from you an introduction for the audience that don't know you. Maybe just start with that.
So my name is Peter Kung Franklin, and I'm the chef and founder of Anan Saigon, which is the core restaurant. And we have Nhao Nhao, which is our cocktail bar, looking at the Vietnamese drinking culture.
Yes.
Yeah. And recently, I just opened Pot of Pho. This is kind of like my quest to elevate, do something specifically with pho, which is the, you know, Vietnam's national dish, the most important dish.
Yes.
So I've been in Vietnam now almost 7 years now, and it's been a wild ride. So
amazing.
I look forward to continuing with that.
Cool. And Peter, you're, of course, Vietnamese blood as well. You were born in Da Lat,
yes,
you spent a long time overseas. Did you ever imagine to be a chef? Because, you know, I still get this question a lot. For those that don't know, I was I joined Peter in his quest for this a number of years ago. We were no longer business partners, but we of course, keep in touch like today. Tell us about, like, from corporate, like, if somebody searches you on LinkedIn, it's like J.P. Morgan, like, and then you're a chef. Could you just talk about that a little bit, because a lot of our followers are like overseas Vietnamese who have these dreams of opening coffee shops and restaurants. Maybe you can inspire them a little bit about
I think, you know, we live in a world that's changing now. I think that, you know, in the past, people continue to work on one job. They do that for their whole life and then they retire.
Yes.
That's kind of like the old model. I think the new model now that we have the capability to have multiple lives, multiple careers, particularly for people like us who may be born in one place but live and work in other places. So that process is possible, particularly in newer environment, let's say in Hong Kong and Vietnam, because these are newer emerging economy. There are a lot of opportunity for people to try to do. So first they have to have the internal drive to say, okay, I want to explore something new. I want to do something different because of my passion, but my skill set. So that process, it takes time to do. It's not like, you know, overnight I say, okay, I'm going to go from being an investment banker to being a chef.
Yes.
So you need to go through that process. It can happen. And over time, you evolve, almost create a new identity for yourself, you know, because people that used to know me from over 10 years ago, they know that I work in a bank. But some of them haven't never seen me working as a chef before. They can see the big transformation, but the process is somewhat gradual.
You know, I remember 7-8 years ago when we first did an interview actually on our .com. So if you go to vietcetera.com, you can actually read this article. September 16th, I believe, 2016.
Yes.
Offline, I didn't publish it, but you mentioned that many, many years ago, you didn't know the difference between foie gras and pâté, if I recall correctly.
Correct, that
Sorry,
is correct.
I'm making fun of you right now.
I have someone named Pascal who can prove that because I went to his house.
Yes.
And then, so at that point, I even very basic stuff I didn't know about.
Yeah.
So it means that, you know, we have to be willing to start to learn from the ground up to from the very basic to then have a strong foundation to have something more complex. And if you want to do something that is world-class, that's another matter altogether.
Yeah,
so it's a big learning curve, very big learning curve.
Yeah, and it's never too late. I think that was a big lesson I learned from you, Peter.
Yeah.
We're about 20 or so odd years difference, I think. And I remember when I started working with you, I was always quite inspired by that transition you made. And despite starting much later in your career in restaurants and just food in general, still managed to pull it off. So well done again.
Thank you.
I want to move over, and for those who don't follow this podcast regularly, you might know that we actually had Peter on this particular program probably about 2, maybe even 3 years ago. You can look it up if you're curious to see if the stories are consistent and how things have emerged. But since then, Peter has gone on to, and his team have gone on to win, I believe, 3 consecutive years of being listed in Asia 50 Best Restaurants, as well as being listed in the 1-star Michelin Guide. Peter, since then, how have things changed for the business? I think the good and the bad, too. And before you answer that, I remember you, among many other chefs, always told me, kind of like, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Because, yes, the recognition is all for the hard work and getting especially Vietnamese food on the map. But at the same time, it's also difficult because expectations increase. Your team is under pressure, hopefully in a good way. Let's hear how things have changed, yes, especially since the Michelin Guide.
First of all, you know, I think we try to build an Angan restaurant, not say to win any specific awards to target with, but these are only measurement of what we have been able to do, and this is the outside recognition. So Angan Saigon has always been, from the beginning, is really elevating Vietnamese food, and to do in a new way. We call this a nouvelle cuisine, a new Vietnamese, Am Thực Mới. So that process we continue to do, to develop, regardless whether it's 50 Best or Michelin in terms of recognition. The second part is we have always been a very open, accessible restaurant in terms of what we call casual fine dining. So we don't have the traditional tablecloth of a Michelin star restaurant. And that's part of our identity. Part of it is being inside a middle of a Vietnamese living wet market. That's part of our identity. We want to maintain that. Yep. But I think number one, with 3 years ago with 50 Best, people don't even know what is the 50 Best restaurant, but we were at that point, I'm considered now not outside of Vietnam as one of the best restaurants in Asia, which is quite an important recognition for us, really, to get Vietnamese cuisine on the map, to be on equal par with, let's say, Hong Kong, Singapore food, or Thailand, for example. And then I think with Michelin, it's another level altogether, because Michelin is a very global standard that has a very long history, that is recognized around the world in terms of what the star means.
Let me stop you there, Peter, because I love eating 1-star street food. Yes, it doesn't matter to me. I've been to all of them. What does a 1-star Michelin mean? And so I'd love to hear from you as the chef and owner and holder of a 1-star now, because 1-star can mean this over here and then 1-star here in Vietnam. What is it to you as a chef and owner and also functionally as a business?
Right. If you look at Michelin at its core, what the star meant in the first place to start with, which is really a restaurant that is very good in its category and is worth going to be travel to that destination. So that's at the very basic level, that's what it's saying.
Yes.
So that means it's doing high quality cooking and good technique, good food.
It doesn't mean white napkin necessarily.
Right. Yeah. But the problem is, with the history of Michelin, it has developed into this, what we call white tablecloth, which is more the traditional Michelin standard. But Michelin also has evolved into this new, what we believe are part of this new breed of more of the casual fine dining that doesn't have the more formality of a traditional Michelin restaurant. So for me as a chef, and for us as a restaurant, now we're part of this global community. There's very in Saigon, there's only one. In Vietnam, now we have 4. And the limited number of them around Asia that is globally recognized. So that puts a certain, in terms of expectations of maintaining quality, standard, consistency beyond Vietnam, beyond Asia, so into this kind of global format, what it means to be a Michelin star restaurant.
I think you can redefine the Michelin way too, where especially younger consumers, everything is viral on the internet nowadays.
And
young people, just because it's expensive doesn't mean it's Michelin these days too, right? And you could have both, obviously. But like, for instance, when you say Michelin, my thinking in the past, I've changed now, but I still am aware of it, is like you think of the server with the bow tie, the collared shirt, the white napkin on their arm, and then, you know, plating like 10 courses very delicately. Yes,
10 forks, 10 knives, and you don't know which one you're supposed to use like this.
But even then, that's kind of dying out in a way, because that kind of service, and it's either not sustainable at a restaurant level. You know, we see the headlines all the time.
Correct.
Super nice restaurants globally right now, they shut down because the costs are too high to run. Everything's automated now, right?
Yes.
But here in Asia, because it's still emerging, we can kind of redefine the category in a way.
Correct.
I think that's what Anand pretty much has done. And so when I see a lot of my overseas guests come to Vietnam and they want to try Anand or another Michelin guide rated restaurant, I try to temper their expectations in a good way, not being hey, you know, this is more fun, this is more high energy, and you're going to hear a story. That doesn't mean necessarily it's you're going to have a white napkin. Yes. Or maybe you do now. I don't know.
No, I don't.
You don't.
I still don't have a white white napkin.
Okay,
we don't have tablecloth.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the biggest challenges. So I think for me, how do we continue to evolve? Which we do anyways. But now, let's say, where is Vietnamese cuisine going? Mm-hmm. And let's say now you can see that our F&B has developed tremendously. Mm. So we want to kind of lead that to some extent, continue in a new direction. That's something that we do regardless with this Michelin. But the other one, the Michelin is kind of helping us into a certain direction.
Right.
So
you get kind of customers you've never had before.
Correct.
So which is my next question. What's the good and bad of a Michelin? We talked offline a little bit about
the
challenges.
Let's say, you know, from the good perspective is it's putting this certain standard in. To some extent, pressure can be good pressure, bad pressure. Mm-hmm. So we have our team and me, we have more pressure to maintain a certain standard in terms of consistency and quality.
Yes.
More than before. So that's like almost a little squeeze. So that forces you to work harder and be better. So that's both a good and bad pressure.
Have you worked harder in your life than ever?
Well, I think I'm a little bit different because I've been fairly consistent because before I worked just as hard as now.
Of course.
So it's really a gradual, continual process because, you know, I think you don't want to burn yourself out, and I want to do stuff that's long term. So that part I don't change too much, but it's a different kind of pressure, kind of like the pressure to climb a mountain and the pressure to stay in a mountain. They're different kind of pressure, but they're still pressure, you know. You know, our business volume in terms of the new people coming because of Michelin star and people looking for Michelin dining experiences, I would say that's about 20% increase, let's say, in terms of our volume. But the thing with our restaurant, we were really busy every night before. Now, as I mentioned now, let's say every night now, from 5 o'clock when we open until we close, is busy all the time.
How long is the wait list?
Right now it's about a month.
So how long is the wait list on a typical day? Let's say it's a Monday or like a Sunday, I'm trying to get in. What's the likelihood of me getting it?
Pretty low.
Okay.
So it's a little much harder to get in. So we need to
pre-book. Here's one hack. If you write to them saying you listen to this podcast, they might let you in.
Yeah. Well, we do have a certain secret for people who live in Vietnam. Oh, I think, for example, let's say we have a rooftop bar and a Nyo Nyo bar. And right now, for part of her, it's still relatively open.
Okay.
So let's say we can put people who live in Vietnam who want to come on a short term into that space.
Okay.
And then we reserve the formal restaurant base for our guests who book the tasting menu.
Okay.
So let's say when we get the award of our staff and everyone very happy, but also now they have to work a lot harder.
Yeah.
And they have to do it every day. So that's kind of thing. It's with the recognition come that kind of responsibility. And now in terms of the quality now, we pay a lot more attention to consistency, quality of all the dishes because of Michelin standard.
Yeah.
And then I think from the big change is that before we always done, you know, a la carte and tasting menu. Let's say maybe, but before a lot of people don't know about tasting menu, but maybe only about 10%. Order tasting menu.
Today?
No, that's before.
Okay, now.
With Michelin now, it's like 50%, 60% tasting menu.
So you have to change the kitchen operation.
My whole kitchen operation, the whole kitchen has been revamped.
Are you thinking about even removing a la carte at some point?
Yes, we have not completely changed that, but we have just reduced the a la carte to be more focused. And then now because of our team, because to work to do tasting menu, it requires different skill set.
Mm.
You have to be a lot more detailed. Let's say a dish can have 20 components.
Yeah.
A la carte, maybe only two or three, so it can go out very quickly. So that means we have to evolve the whole process. Our kitchen now, if you come back and look at it, it's actually, it looks the same, but it's quite different.
Mm.
It's now set up for tasting menus.
On that note, when, you know, Peter and I worked together a very long time ago, when we built the place, there was only one kitchen and a prep room.
Yes.
Do you have more kitchens upstairs now too?
Yes. Okay. So now we have subdivided that. We have more specialized team that focus on pastry on another floor.
Mm.
Let's say when we do soups and broth steaming, we do another floor. So we spread out a lot. So the team now is everywhere within the building.
Okay.
and the ground floor, which is the core part where we do all the plating dishes, that has evolved a lot.
Do you still live there too, Peter?
So that's the whole process. But I think for the team, there's a lot of pressure, and let's say to be much more precise, more accurate, more consistent, and all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, we can step up our game, but to do it all the time, that's really hard.
Mm.
So that's the thing that we're trying to train our staff to be really focused on detail, take care of things, but do it on a very consistent basis all the time, and then pay attention. So that's a lot of pressure to perform. You know, it's kind of, you have to perform all the time.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So, and then on the good side, I think, you know, the business volume has gone up, so we can afford to invest in people more.
Mm-hmm.
We can, for our space, we have improved the look and feel to make it a little bit more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We have fundamentally changed who we are or move out. We do keep within the wet market.
Mm.
With the Michelin recognition, we're able to attract better quality kitchen staff, service staff, so that helps a lot in terms of our recruitment process. Mm. But when they come, they have to work really hard.
Yeah, they're immediately like, is another level of intensity.
It is, in terms of intensity, level of work, and it starts as soon as we open.
Yeah, I watch these international documentaries all the time of restaurants like Elenia in Chicago.
Yes,
it just frightens me sometimes. Wow, this is, you have to get really tough people, but that are truly motivated, not just there for a paycheck.
Correct.
That helps too.
Correct. So they have to have a different level of thinking, and we expect them to be precise.
Mm-hmm.
We expect them to pay attention
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Yeah.
So because traditionally, a lot of the, let's say, Vietnamese restaurant, we're a little bit more casual. We kind of just to let go.
Yeah.
You know, let's say you cook a piece of pork, we just kind of chuck it on the grill, flip it over, it kind of looks good, okay.
Yeah. And then just plate it real quick and then throw it out.
If it looks fine, then you just bring it out. Mm. But now, let's say, now we have like a Japanese Bintutan grill.
Mm.
When we grill, it's much more grilling, more like the Japanese way, which is just two or three pieces on a stick and pay attention to those two. Make sure everything is perfect. So it's a different way of grilling, a different way of cooking.
What's next for Anon?
Again, I think the core Bangang is really we want to maintain our identity as a Vietnamese restaurant doing new Vietnamese cuisine within the wet market environment so that we will continue to maintain our identity. But now we are evolving into the future. What does it mean to be a Michelin star restaurant? What does it mean to be one of the 50 best restaurants in Asia? And then what is the future of F&B hospitality in Vietnam? Because Vietnam itself is evolving very quickly.
Mm.
And so we are looking, changing, evolving into that new Anang, which is part of the new Vietnam. So sometimes, you know, it's a bit of kind of working in the dark sometimes, and sometimes you try to find the light, but we want to continue to move Anang into that direction, into the future. And then, you know, I do have Nyo Nyo Cocktail Bar, which is part of our focus, really look to the cocktail scene. Like, this is also a very important component. We have the dining, and then we have the drinking, which is, you know, Vietnamese people, we like to drink a lot. It's a very important part of who we are. So we this year we'll spend a little bit more time. We just did an event with Bontent in Singapore, so they're both very good in food and drinks. So we will do a few more of these things to drive the drinking culture a little bit more, to see, you know, how do the Vietnamese people drink? What is a Vietnamese bar should be?
Mm.
And stuff like this. And then, I think the third thing is to my dedication to do something with Pot of Pho. So this is the next drive I want to do, to see how far we can push for the Vietnamese dish. So this is very focused. It's essentially one dish, mm-hmm. but it's not only the dish, but it's the idea of the dish. Like, what does it mean when we eat pho, when we make pho? Because the identity of pho is very important. So right now within that, we try to play with that a lot. Mm-hmm. So we have like a tasting menu of 10 dishes that really is kind of riff on pho different ways. So, and so it's kind of that part of the process for me, it's kind of fun to explore new ideas, to do something new that's different that other people may not have done or not doing. But now we have a little bit more freedom, flexibility to do that, because I think as long as we make sure we focus, we take care of Angang doing well, we have a little bit room now, we have good quality staff, we can do a little bit on the drinking to Nhao Nhao, and then with part of it, we are very focused on just looking at pho.
Peter, and for those of you that don't know or haven't been to Anan yet, it's a very unique restaurant in the sense that it also doesn't really offer pho and banh mi when it started. It focused on more the classic Vietnamese dishes, reinventing them, modernizing them, whatever you want to call it, and serving a story. But since then, it's also done a few innovations for banh mi or pho as well, such as the $100 versions. You can find them on YouTube, on the Best Ever Food Review Show, among many other creators, I'm sure, or online. And also, like Peter just mentioned, the drinking culture, kind of reinventing that in a way, a different kind of approach as young people especially are kind of inventing the new drinking style in Vietnam, but also pho, like Peter mentioned. So go check them out as well. Peter, that's such a wonderful story, and you know, congratulations. And I mentioned offline, and it's worth mentioning here as well, I met some of your staff offline recently who were part of the story when we launched Anan.
Yes.
So great to see that you've been able to keep them, and they have all this great knowledge and have joined you on that journey. So congratulations again.
Thank you.
We're nearing the end of our podcast here, and I always like to ask a final question to my guests, which is, Peter, you were an expert in banking and insurance, no longer. I think you've been out of that for a while. You're now, by most measures, an expert in Vietnamese food and drink. I'd like to know what you're not an expert in that you'd like to know more about.
Okay.
Maybe it's a niche of food and drink that you just haven't explored yet, or maybe it's completely something else, to do your job better, because I want our listeners, including you, to be learning, not just hearing what you already know. So what would that be, Peter?
Right. I think, you know... let's say I can write, but I'm not a natural great writer. So I've always wanted to write to express what I want, the idea, let's say, being myself, being Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. Let's say now I do it through food. So I love to be able to, let's say, do something on the writing world. Let's say not necessarily like a traditional cookbook per se, but, you know, but maybe the looking at the idea of food in Vietnam to writing and maybe even incorporate, let's say, photos. I like to take pictures, but I'm not very good, so I would love to learn more how to do, so that to be a capture thing in the image, because I think that's, with food, you know, it's a very transitory. We make something, people eat, then it's gone. We have to create again, but I think with a certain thing, when we think of something that lasts longer, or a legacy or something, when we capture thing in a visual image or in words, they stay around longer to some extent forever, you know, so... So for me, I think I would love to, if I have more time, to learn more about, in terms of the visual and the writing, and then try to do something with that.
Okay.
And you know.
Content creation. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Have you, before we end the podcast, have you like tried a few things aside from just like doing it yourself, like classes or books or?
So I really, to explore a lot of myself, I try to do some writing, and I have my, I bought a few good camera, but
I
still sit in the closet.
Okay, okay.
So that mostly the iPhone. But first, I think it's the idea then is slowly trying to explore learning about it, thinking about it. I think the simmering process for me, I think, is very important because I think then sometime you're lucky there's a moment in time and allows you that space to actually try to do something, you know, but it's there. So, but so it's constantly thinking, simmering, try to see, okay, what are the possibility things? What's the entry point? Like, where's the door that you can go into? And sometimes, you know, the door open and you say, oh, okay, fine. I go in and try. I'm ready, you know? So I think to do anything, we have to be, I think, internally prepared. And this process, it's very, it's inside out. So we need to thinking about it, looking at things and allow these ideas, thoughts, and to some extent, skill can, I think, I believe, can develop internally, you know, to develop the mind, how it thinks. Then when the opportunity comes, we are more ready for it, you know. And then, of course, then you begin another process of really, you know, expressing it and trying to do it. And then that's for me, that's the second process. But the internal process is important for the first step.
Well, very good. Peter, thank you for sharing all your insights. And again, such an inspiration, you know, not even about the awards, just about the process of building and learning constantly at any point in your career. So thank you for sharing, Peter.
It's my pleasure.
For those of you that might be wanting to hear more about Peter's story, you can actually just go to the restaurant. You can hear from him. He's there almost every night. In case you can't, we have our Overseas Vietnamese Homecoming Summit on January 24th here in Ho Chi Minh City, where I'll be doing another fireside chat with Peter, with a lot of left-field questions for you then, Peter. I'll be sending you those questions very soon.
Okay.
You can see Peter live at our summit here at Ho Chi Minh City at the New World Hotel Saigon on the 24th of January. Thank you so much, Peter, for your
time.
And looking forward to seeing the journey progress further. And best of luck. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Hal.
See you guys next time. Bye-bye. You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.